commute to campus, get ready for some big changes in the docks.
And if you've seen teas in the trees, you know they're not there to help you stay warm. Terp Weekly Edition has the latest on Domestic Violence Awareness Month.
This is Terp Weekly Edition, a look at the issues and news in and around the University of Maryland College Park. Terp Weekly Edition is produced by students of the Philip Merrill College of Journalism in cooperation with WMUC Radio.
Welcome to Terp Weekly Edition. I'm Matt Butner.
And I'm Caitlin O'Brien. A change in campus parking meters means no longer having to deal with change. Terp Weekly Edition's Josh Narosky has more.
Parking meters. Can't live with them, can't live without them. However, this year, the Department of Transportation has made some changes to make this necessary evil more convenient for drivers.
Well, last year we had 500 parking meters, single-space parking meters. This year we have just 100, and we've replaced 400 with the multi-space parking meters where you have a space number, you put your space number in, you figure how much time you want, you use a credit card or coins or dollars, and you put in the amount.
These new multi-space parking meters, which are manufactured by Canada-based Digital Payment Technology, are becoming increasingly more common in the Baltimore-Washington area. According to Director of Transportation Services David Allen, the new meters will save about $500,000 as they eliminate the need for cashier-attended parking garages. However, Allen has found that many of the features of the new meters make life easier for those feeding them.
You can use credit cards, you can pay by phone if for some reason you're away from it. Unlike a regular meter, you've not put enough money in, it's, yikes, what do I do? Now you can repay your meter or pay from the beginning, any of the meters by phone. So if you pay by phone, you'll get a text to remind you that it's about to expire.
One important aspect of the new meters is that they are more expensive, costing $2 an hour, a change from last year's fee of 75 cents. Yet the convenience of the new meters is worth the price, as special education professor Rebecca Silverman explains.
My only complaint is that they cost a little bit more than I would like, but they're much better than the old parking meters because you don't have to have change on you, so that's much more convenient.
For Terp Weekly Edition, I'm Josh Narotsky.
The next time you send a tweet or surf the web from your cell phone, thank Maryland's own Bruno Patti for his invention. Patti developed phase shift lithography, the technology behind today's most amazing mobile devices. Patti earned his electrical engineering bachelor's, master's, and doctoral degrees at Maryland's A. James Clark School of Engineering in the late 1980s and early 1990s, and is now a 2009 inductee into the school's Innovation Hall of Fame.
2 weeks ago, we told you the University Health Center was planning a mass flu vaccination drill. The goal? To vaccinate more than 2,000 students, faculty, and staff against the seasonal flu. Thursday, university health officials put the drill into full effect at Ritchie Coliseum. Terp Weekly Edition's Donna Stewart has more.
Sweatshirts and donning umbrellas. A slew of student and health center volunteers gathered in the rain on Thursday afternoon outside Ritchie Coliseum. These volunteers were part of the health center's vaccination drill. Volunteer Heather Tattlebaum says the program was designed for the health center to test its level of preparedness against an epidemic outbreak.
We're doing this program to test our ability to do a drill in case of an emergency where we would have a situation where we'd have to give a number of vaccinations at one time.
Kelly Kessler, Assistant Director of Health Promotions for the University of Maryland Health Center, says they've been planning the event since May.
Quite honestly, a lot of value has been in the planning of this exercise, the preparations, the discussions, the dialogue, things that we would not have time to do if we were in a true emergency. We've really been able to flesh out and sort of vet amongst a group of experts those who would be truly involved in an emergency situation.
But the event was more than just a drill. To practice max vaccination, the UMD Health Center prepared 2,000 doses of the flu vaccine to administer to UMD students, faculty, and the general public. All in effort to help protect the campus from the more common seasonal flu.
You know, to say just the seasonal flu means, you know, implies that it's not very severe. And we know that we see students who have, you know, severe reactions from the seasonal flu. And we've been dealing with that for numerous years. You know, dehydration, you know, lots of missed class. So this is actually an opportunity for us to help keep our campus healthier as a whole.
Senior Raphael Green was just one of the UMD students that braved the rain and cold weather to get his annual flu shot.
I wanted to come out and get a flu shot because getting sick is never fun, and I heard that it was great and had a little space in between classes, so I came out.
but he wasn't surprised that the crowd gathered at the Coliseum wasn't very large.
I just think that people don't really prioritize their health until it's a little too late. The people are mainly reactive until a problem faces them, and especially with the weather too, that probably drove a lot of people back. But most students are pretty lazy, so not surprised.
But UMD student Rhea Johnson thinks it wasn't just the weather that kept students from coming to the event.
Some people are unaware. I didn't even know this was here until a friend told me. A lot of people that I know probably don't even know about it either. But mainly because of the fact that it wasn't publicized very much about the influenza shot that was on campus.
Despite the turnout, UMD Health Center Director Stekard Bodison was satisfied with the drill.
I think it went very well. I think our plan was executed very nicely. I think the weather may have prevented the kind of participation from the public that we wanted, but I think it went very well.
From Ritchie Coliseum, this is Shauna Stewart for Terp Weekly Edition.
If you missed the drill, you can still get a seasonal vaccine on campus. For a fee, the University Health Center offers both the injection and flu mist option. For more information, visit www.health.umd.edu.
How do you define censorship? That's what University of Maryland students and administrators have been debating since last spring. The controversy was sparked by a planned screening at the Hoff Theater of Pirates 2, Stagnee's Revenge, one of the most expensive pornographic films ever made. The event prompted the state legislator to order the university's Board of Regents to set new policy to regulate screenings of obscene movies on campuses. A draft version would permit such films to be shown if a so-called educational component were included with the screening. Talk of the policy has prompted statewide protests by students who say that it would be a violation of the First Amendment's protection of freedom of speech.
Coming up, Maryland wins the title of America's Greenest Campus, and we've got the campus-wide reaction.
And President Vogt's latest video address. This is Terp Weekly Edition. Have questions about what the UMD administration has planned for this year? President Vogt may have your answers in his newly released Fall 2009 video message. Addressing the entire Maryland community, Vogt pledged that despite budget constraints, he will maintain his commitment to building an even more powerful university and to funding excellent research projects. Vogt assured that Maryland will continue to thrive and expand as the Great Expectations campaign to improve the university is on track, and that generous donations to the Keep Me Maryland Fund has made it a huge success.
Have no fear, Terps. Fear the turtle is here to stay. An announcement that the university would be adopting a new slogan prompted worry in students and alumni that the beloved Fear the Turtle would be lost. A new slogan, Unstoppable Stops Here, will be launched. However, administrators assure that the much-loved Fear the Turtle will remain a key part of the university. The creation of a new slogan was prompted by concern that Fear the Turtle had become too associated with athletics. The new slogan is based around four main ideas: research, student achievement, a vibrant state, and a strategic location.
Normally, when you think of homecoming, you think of one giant celebration and an exciting football game to go with it. But in a year when the football team has failed to meet expectations, Terp Weekly Edition's Matt Moderno set out to gauge fan interest in advance of the game.
Disillusioned. This is one way to sum up the general feeling of Terrapin football fans. The Maryland football team, who goes into their homecoming game showdown against Virginia with a 2-4 record, have been somewhat of a disappointment to fans so far this season.
One word, underachievers. I think that they have a decent squad. Nothing quite like the glory days of Scotty McBrien back there, but I think they could perform a lot better than they have been.
They're underachievers. It's pretty much based on the lines. The youth of the lines has really cost us. The youth of the offensive line, Chris Turner getting sacked about 20 times a game, and the youth of the defensive line, we're not getting any pressure on anybody. We're not stopping the run at all.
But how has this attitude affected their interest in the homecoming game?
I might make it, I might not. Don't know, I'll tailgate and then see how I feel about going to the stadium.
And while students aren't the only ones having a hard time getting pumped up for the game, some alumni are a bit more optimistic. Mike Green, a 1967 graduate and current Terrapin Club member, had this to say.
We haven't played as well as we'd like to have played, but you know, we're here at homecoming. We've got to hope that we can win today, and hopefully we can salvage the season.
The lifelong Terp fan continued by saying,
I can remember some years before this that were probably much less exciting. We had some very lean years back in the 90s.
With realization setting in, the Terps have an uphill battle in order to make a bowl game. Some fans are already looking on to basketball season.
I had been looking forward to football season until I went to the Cal game, but now basketball season looks like it's going to be a much brighter spot in my senior year.
Having Grievous Vasquez coming back and having a couple of good young freshmen who are going to help us with the inside game, I think, you know, hopefully we'll do better than we did last year. Not quite as much drama as we had at the end of the year to get to the NCAAs, hopefully.
From the seemingly less rowdy tailgates of Lot 1, for Terp Weekly Edition, I'm Matt Moderno.
Even in the midst of a losing football season, three University of Maryland students are capitalizing on the school's enduring sense of pride and attempting to give their classmates even more ways to support their Terrapins. Dan Burns, Mark Otto, and Michael McGuire have taken their love of the Terps, tailgating, and business and sparked a trend on Maryland's campus. The three friends started MOB Design Company and produced shirts intended for students to wear to football games.
I first started to take notice at tailgates and in my friends' pictures. Every week it just seemed like more people were wearing them. Now you see a lot of the t-shirts on game days.
Their advertising strategy has been mostly grassroots. Using Facebook and word of mouth, they have marketed their shirts to the undergraduate students at Maryland.
We just wanted something fun we could make a business out of. The shirts are just funny. It's cool to see everyone wearing them. It started off just with our friends, but it's really caught on.
What started off as just one funny shirt that the boys wore all together at the tailgates turned into a company that now sells shirts to people all over campus. The shirts feature Terrapins, College Park, and humorous catchphrases. The tailgating t-shirts are the company's first business venture. According to the webpage, shirts are $15, 3 for $40, and 10 for $130. To order a shirt, you can send an email to mobdesignscp@gmail.com.
Stay tuned for an interview with Maryland's most popular music bloggers.
You're listening to TWE.
Elvis Costello is 55, Barbra Streisand is 67, and Michael Jackson's dead, which means it's time to find some new music. Jennifer Memelo sat down with UMD student and co-founder of Knox Road music blog, Lee Levin, who's working together with his band of bloggers to bring indie bands into the spotlight. To find out how they got started, the perks of being in the blogosphere, and the bands you'll need to know this fall.
So what is the Knox Road Music Blog?
Knox Road Music Blog is a website at knoxroad.com, and I run it with two other guys. We basically feature artist reviews, album reviews. We talk about up-and-coming artists. It's usually based in like the indie genre. So we kind of try to basically provide new and hopefully likable music.
Where do you find music to blog about?
You know, we'll come out, there's basically two different sides to the blog. There's the more mainstream indie music, which is almost, you know, it's an oxymoron, I guess, but not really. And then there's you know, the more indie music, if you understand what I mean. Like, some of it is kind
obscure.
Yeah, a lot of it is more obscure, and in that sense, we'll sometimes find it ourselves through MySpace and otherwise, but now that we've gotten more popular, we're lucky enough to have a bunch of emails sent to us every day, you know, whether it's through PR companies or the artists themselves, which are our favorite emails. We're not prone to not downloading from other music blogs to find some music, but if we do find it from other blogs, we'll always point it out.
Has the blog exceeded your expectations?
I mean, I definitely started, you know, with a very strong sense of this is going to be great and it's going to be awesome, but, like, what does that even mean? And we put ourselves out there a lot more than expected. Like, we're working on showcases and we have a radio show now on WMUC. Yeah, so, I mean, in general, I think the level of interaction on the blog and how many emails we're getting, how many shows we get invited to, you know, it's a humbling experience for sure. And you really have to just constantly dedicate yourself to writing all of the time and finding new artists. And it can get very difficult, and you can find yourself a little disillusioned with the whole music industry. But that's why it's good to have two other really capable music bloggers working with me.
What kinds of bands can you recommend for our listeners?
This isn't to take anything away from the other bands we blog about. Oh, they're Frightened Rabbit. And their album just blew me away. And then I just found all of their old discography, which isn't much. They kind of get you with their keyboard playing and soft acoustic strumming a lot of the time, too. The second band is Frederik, and they are, I think there are six members of them. They're based out of Sweden. It's such jangly indie pop and happy indie pop that, you know, I just can't help but listening to, and it's really catchy. And then thirdly, I want to talk about Anathelo, who are also kind of popular. But I mentioned them because they're one of my all-time favorites. There's a really big group of them, and they play a lot with bells and a lot of different sorts of drums, and the guy's voice who sings, he has such a beautiful falsetto. So it just makes the music come through. So, you know, those are the three bands that I'd recommend, although there are so many more. And if you want to see more, you should go to the website at www.knoxroad.com.
All right, well, thank you so much for joining me here.
Thank you for having me.
For Terp Weekly Edition, I'm Jennifer Memelo.
Tune in Sundays at noon to hear Lee, Jamie, and John's Knox Road Radio Show on WMUC.
On October 12th, the Clarice Smith Performing Arts Center was part of a groundbreaking event to commemorate the 11th anniversary of the murder of 22-year-old Matthew Shepard. While he was a student at the University of Wyoming at Laramie, Shepard was robbed and murdered by two residents for being a homosexual. 5 weeks after his death, the Tectonic Theater Group in New York traveled there to interview residents for a play they wrote about Shepard entitled The Laramie Project. The play consists of quotes from interviews with residents and local law enforcement officials who worked on the case. It also includes entries from diaries which members of the theater group kept during their stay. Last year, the group traveled back to Wyoming to see what, if anything, had changed. Their new play, The Laramie Project, 10 years later, includes updated interviews with the same residents and officials, but also with Shepard's murderers. It was performed simultaneously on 150 stages worldwide last week. A live telecast from Lincoln Center in New York opened the performance with introductions from actress Glenn Close and Matthew Shepard's mother, Judy. In addition to the unique performance, audience members were encouraged to use Twitter to ask questions for a Q&A session with the Tectonic Group and Mrs. Shepard. One of the tweeted questions was chosen was actually from the C-SPAC audience. However, no one in the theater was able to hear which one over their initial raucous applause at hearing their own name.
Throughout October, which is Domestic Violence Awareness Month, there are efforts underway of hundreds of college campuses and in communities across America to raise awareness for women who have been victims of a personal violence or relationship abuse. TERP Weekly Edition's Michael O'Neill tells us how one group at Maryland is trying to bring a sense of healing to students who have experienced the pain of a sexual crime.
You may have seen them hanging on clotheslines in Hornbait Plaza this past Wednesday. Their t-shirts were student victims of sexual crime could anonymously express feelings of hurt and grief from their past experiences. One shirt says, "He was my best friend and he was drunk on January 23rd, 2006 when he raped me." Another shirt reads, "I have lived through this horror." One student, psychology major and senior AJ Trenzia, wrote a message on his shirt in honor of his best friend who was raped this past summer. To AJ, the key for victims overcoming sexual crimes is to maintain an upbeat attitude despite difficult circumstances.
People have more strength than they realize, and, you know, to stay positive and just that things will get better. I mean, there's always the light at the end of the tunnel. It's just making it through.
One student who chose not to give her name felt the t-shirts brought more of an awareness and gave her a glimpse inside the mind and heart of a victim.
I haven't really had any contact with people who have been raped before, who have experienced domestic violence. So seeing them express themselves through these shirts is very powerful.
The annual Clothesline Project is run by a student group from the Health Center known as SART, which stands for Sexual Assault Response and Prevention Program. The group consists of two teams. Peer educators set out to create discussions among students on gender issues and sexual assaults in hopes of bringing more awareness to the campus community. The second team is made up of advocates who also work in the Health Center and provide free counsel and 100% confidential services to students who may have experienced sexual crime. One peer educator, government and philosophy major Caitlin Murphy, believes getting the word out on these types of issues could bring more healing to victims.
I think one of the biggest stigmas about sexual assault and relationship violence is that because it's not something we talk about, people tend to underestimate how frequently it happens. And unfortunately, just because we don't talk about it doesn't mean that it's not real.
SARP hopes to continue to create a safe environment where victims' voices of sexual assault will be heard. They encourage anyone who has been the victim of sexual assault to not hold back from receiving help or counsel from their services. In College Park, I'm Michael O'Neill for TERP Weekly Edition.
Thanks for listening. I'm Caitlin O'Brien.
And I'm Matt Butner. Tune in next week for the latest news in and around College Park.
This has been TERP Weekly Edition, produced and written by students of the Philip Merrill College of Journalism in cooperation with WMUC Radio. Please join us next week at the same time for a look at the issues in and around the University of Maryland College Park.